this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Did you ever have to work on Christmas Day? Did you ever have to work Christmas Eve? I did a couple times, and it was an amazing experience. Coming up for you tonight, Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Do you enjoy cheese balls and crackers over the holidays? Well, there's a backstory there, and I'll share it with you coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Season's greetings, Sterling on Sunday fans. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's Christmas show, I share a heartwarming story about a former NYPD member who consumed too much rum and eggnog. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
But we're giving the toll-free lines a rest tonight. Let's just take it easy. You and I are going to talk on Christmas Eve. It's a special time where we get to be together alone without the distractions of people who annoy us. And let's be honest about that. Everybody annoys us. That's the great thing about being an introvert. Everybody annoys me. I am not sensitive. I am touchy as hell. That's what distinguishes me from an outgoing person. I found myself on a bizarre back-and-forth chat on LinkedIn, which is Facebook for people at work. But it's just goofball time. And this person put up a thing about, what a great team we had at that radio station. This radio station was so successful because we had a great team. Well, first of all, I've been in radio all my life. It's all I know. It's all I care about. And I never had heard of the radio station. It was in Los Angeles. I mean, it was a big radio station, I guess. I never heard of it. Boy, it was a great team. And I texted to him. I said, well, I'm glad you had a great team. But what would you do with a lone wolf? What if you had a lone wolf working for you who worked best alone, at home, at the back of the cave, some barbecue, and came up with really good ideas? Well, we look for team players, was his answer. And I'm like, don't you get it? If I'm thinking about a work problem and I'm working on a solution for the job, for the employer, I am a team player. I just don't need to sit around with a goofy smile on my face pretending that I like sitting around other people with goofy smiles on their faces. I don't need to sit in a room and brainstorm. I can't do it. The minute a lot of other people start throwing out ideas like that, my brain shuts down. I see these people who are working two or three in one office. How do you do that? Because once somebody else would get on the phone, all my attention would go to them. I wouldn't be able to partition and not see them or hear them. It's a very false economy to say, I like team players. You can say, I like people who are loyal to the company. I like people who are working hard toward a common solution, because that's really what you're saying. When you say, I like team players, no, what you're really saying is you want a bunch of people to work toward a common solution. Do you care if they're brainstorming? Do you care if they're sitting in the same room? You shouldn't. What I used to do when I actually had a real job and I wasn't talking in my laundry room, oh yeah, I'm in my laundry room, and I wasn't in my laundry room, I would listen, I would take the big problems, and then I'd go home. I wrote all the stuff that mattered at home. I wrote all the stuff that mattered when no one was bothering me. I'd come up with the solutions in the shower. But, you know, we like team players here, which is great if you're Trevor Lawrence. But if you're not Trevor Lawrence, what do you care? Terry Francona, I understand he wants team players. I got that. It's very difficult to be a pitcher at home alone. Tough to be a shortstop alone at home, unless you have daughters. My name is Walter Sterling, and you and I are together on Christmas Eve. This is not a best of. It's not a repeat. This is a show for us on Christmas Eve. And odds are you and I are in your car or your 18-wheeler. And I've always thought it was almost romantic to be driving an 18-wheeler on Christmas Eve because, first of all, a lot of 18-wheelers decorate their trucks. They decorate their trucks for Christmas. And if you've decorated your 18-wheeler for Christmas, if you decorated your truck, next stop, yeah, the Love Truck Stop or whichever one you like, whatever truck stop it is, I'd appreciate it if you'd take out your phone and take a picture of it and email it to me, and I'll post it on Instagram. I don't have to put your, you don't have to have your name, and I'll put it on Facebook. You don't have to give me your name. Don't care about that. But if you put up where you are and a picture of your truck decorated, that would be the coolest thing to see. Here's what you do. You send it to WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Take a picture, and we'll put it up. And that's how the people who aren't on the road with you right now will have a chance to see how cool your truck is. Tonight, we have Vic Ferrari, a retired New York City police detective, who's going to share Christmas stories as a New York City police detective. I'm going to share with you the real story of the Christmas Story, that terrific movie, A Christmas Story. Well, there's a pretty amazing backstory that goes with that, my friend. And working on Christmas Day and working on Christmas Eve, and we'll talk about good Christmases. And then I want to talk about one of my very favorite subjects, which is why malls are failing. And now, after 3 weeks of having to go to the malls, you may have some very deep thoughts about why malls are failing. I do this show every week on Sunday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on this station. And it's always live. It's always not about old white guys screaming at Democrats. Nobody's screaming at Democrats here. I try to talk about my day, and maybe it has a little to do with your day. To me, if my check engine light goes on, well, that's a lot bigger news than anything that happened in Washington. Or worse, the tsunami of problems is water in the basement. If I have water in the basement, that is the worst possible scenario. And I'll talk about that. And then I have an 11-year-old daughter who I hope to gosh is asleep, and an 18-year-old daughter and a 21-year-old daughter, and I'm darn sure they're not asleep. But they're all excited for Santa Claus. It's an honor to be with you on Christmas Eve. Thank you for choosing this show on Christmas Eve. The name of this show is Sterling on Sunday, but tonight it's Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by Ringo.
I love playing live.
I mean, that's what it's all about for me. That's the gig. If you want to connect with an audience, you've got to love them. You've got to love what you do, and you got to love them because that's why you're there, because they've come out to see you. Bars, pubs, clubs, weddings, anywhere. There's a magic moment when the band and the audience are just on. And that's a lot of peace and love. So when I tour now, you know, I love the audience. They love me. And we have certain gigs where it's just heart-filling.
Good evening. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. It's Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Christmas. It's an original show. It's not a best of. It's not the Bitcoin show. It's not the insurance and you show. It's not the annuity show. It's a live radio show. I'm sorry. I take it back. It's an original radio show, and it's great to be with you. Sterling on Sunday. Pick up that phone. Take a photo of whatever you're looking at, holiday or not, especially if you're driving a truck that's decorated, or if you're like Keith Fonz in Alaska and you have decorated your car as a DoorDash guy, and send it to me, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. That's the email address. Send me a photo of your car, your holiday, your truck, your decorated truck, to WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Keith Fonz, a year ago, this guy is a DoorDash driver in North Pole, Alaska. And I thought at first, like you did, it was a joke, but actually there's an actual town called North Pole. And he's a DoorDash driver. And what Keith did is he decorated his car with Christmas lights. And he's put them up on Facebook. I've seen the Christmas lights. They're tasteful. They look great. It doesn't interfere with his vision. It's not like hanging 20 things from his rearview mirror, including those horrible Christmas trees in July that are yellow and red and have the, just the, it smells horrible. No, these are tasteful lights. They're pretty. And they're just on his roof, not on his hood or his trunk. No, they're just on his roof. He's gotten 6 citations last year and at least 2 this year saying that these lights are illegal. How can you have pretty Christmas lights on the roof of your car and have them be illegal? Meanwhile, he had done it every year previous to last year and this year, no problem. Last year, when it finally got to the judge says, this is ridiculous, and tossed it out, threw it out. North Pole, Alaska. A DoorDash driver put Christmas lights on his car, and he got tickets. North Pole, Alaska, where Santa did all of his work for tonight. And Santa's really busy tonight. This is the busy night. My 11-year-old is listening very hard. And I'm sure Santa will visit her because she's a magical kid. She's a great kid like yours. My name's Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling on Sunday. You and I have experienced the mall during the past 3 weeks in an intense way that we didn't before. You know, the malls are suffering because they're blaming Amazon. And I say it's not Amazon. Yeah, absolutely not. In fact, when I see something online that's a little expensive or interesting or different that I've never seen in person before, what do? I go to a store where I can experience it 3D. I would suggest that Amazon has, in fact, delivered many, many thousands, tens of thousands of customers to the mall. Amazon's the best friend of the mall. What happens when we get to the mall? Let's explore. I walk in, and immediately I'm looking for where I have to go, and there's a map. And it says, you are here. Well, I can't orient myself to that map. That map's more confusing than if I just walked. Then if I walk the mall, I'll get to a scary part of the mall where there's just one big anchor store and nothing else around it. If I go into the anchor store, things go downhill quickly. The big department store, the store they say is the reason that the mall exists, the reason that the mall is successful is because of the anchor stores. Well, I would suggest that the anchor stores are killing the malls. I go into an anchor store at Christmas, and I go to the men's department, and I want to get something for my brother. I go in, and I know exactly what I want to get him because that's how men shop. When men go into a store, men know exactly what they want. I can't speak for all women, although it's been my experience that women don't seem to know for sure the way men do. Men go in to hunt and collect and leave. We don't go in to shop. Now I'm in the men's department, and immediately it feels very cold. Have you noticed that when you get in a men's department? It feels very cold in a big department store. And why is that? It's because nobody's there. The air conditioning is working, but there's no one there to absorb it. There are no guys in the men's department. Now I'm in the men's department, and I see what I want. It's a specific brand, a specific type of shirt. I see it, and I want to buy it. But I need it in a different size. So what do? I look for a clerk. Looking around for a clerk, no clerk. I go to Oh, wait, there's a clerk walking through right now. Hi, can you help me? I need help with this shirt. It's not my department. Psh, gone. In a puff. Not my department. Gone. Another person comes through carrying a big stack of something. That's not my department. And they, psh, gone. They're gone. Finally, somebody shows up and says, oh, yeah, let me go and see if we have that in the size you want. They go, they come back. Yeah, here it is. Oh, good, great. Can I buy it? Well, now, in a major department store, the biggest obstacle between a customer and the department store getting the money is the transaction. Now, why is it that I can go into a drive-in, an ice cream shop, most retail stores, and I'm standing at the counter, and all I have to do is take out the credit card and slap it against the reader, the white card reader, and 2 seconds later, we're done, and it asks me if I want a tip, and no, I shouldn't have to tip a clerk at an ice cream store. Sorry, I shouldn't. In the department stores, they either have a real desktop computer from the 80s or an actual cash register from 1924. Big thing. And then the clerk says, I need to get my supervisor to unlock the register because it's got cobwebs on it from the last time anybody wanted to buy anything in the men's department of a big department store. Well, now the supervisor comes over, slaps their card against a screen, takes out a secret key on a big keychain like a janitor in an elementary school, puts it in there, turns it, and finally I can give them money. Oh, no, I can't take cash. What do you mean you can't take cash? This is America. It's a capitalist. You're not going to take my cash? Isn't that better for you? Isn't that a no-cost transaction versus having to share some of that with a credit card? I can't take cash. Between the time I picked that shirt and the time I was able to walk out that store without being arrested, it was at least 23 minutes. I wasted 23 minutes to buy an $18 shirt because I didn't want to use a credit card. Here, I got a $20 bill. Here, take the money. Tell you what, I don't even need to change. Just let me get out of here. How many times have you been in a situation in a retail store where your whole mission in life is to not buy another item? Are you going to look for something else? Hey, may I suggest this? No, that never happens anymore. Now what happens is I will do anything I have to do to get out of here. Whatever I have to do to get out of this store, I will do to get out of this store. And there's always that cologne smell in the men's department. And by the time I'm buying the item, the $18 item, and I've gone through 23 minutes of transactional experience with the retailer, that cologne is starting to cause the back of my neck to cramp up. That cologne is starting to cause me to have a headache and a discomfort, and it's just not a good experience. The other reason the malls are dying is because they do nothing to take care of mom. When I come into a mall, what should there be? There should be strollers lined up that I could rent or be given to put the toddler in. There should be a play area for kids 5 and up with a cop and real babysitters to watch them and let them play for a little while. Otherwise, what's going to happen? I'm with the toddler, I'm with the 9-year-old, the 11-year-old. What's going to happen? I have to do everything in my power to not walk past the Lego store. Because if I walk past the Lego store in the mall, the Lego store will seize me, will seize my child, will grab my child, and my child will go, Legos, Legos, Legos. There's no way to easily extract a child from a Lego store without a tantrum. And that's if they're 22. But imagine when they're 5. It's a terrible situation. No matter what they do, and if the kid's in the Lego store, it's a sleazy trick. The only way to get the kid out of the Lego store is to buy some Legos. All right, I'm going to buy some Legos for you. You can play with them in the car. You can play with them, you can take home. But the single worst thing that every mall is guilty of, and it should be a city ordinance that makes it illegal, it should not be legal. How dare you charge for my kid to have their picture taken with your Santa? It's just so short-sighted and stupid. You want to take a picture with Santa. The mall should take pictures with Santa, professional, well-done photos, and then put into a cardboard frame with the name of the mall on it. That's a keeper for the rest of that kid's life. There will be the name of the mall with Santa Claus the rest of their life. That is the best advertising you could possibly have. Instead, you want a lousy $38 from me for 4 different sizes of Santa, unless, oh, gee, why don't you invest in $58 of the picture with Santa, and then everybody in your family can have the picture with Santa. It is a crooked, lousy, criminal thing to do, to charge pictures with Santa. And then they go, gee, you know, the mall's dying. Why is the mall dying? The mall's dying because at every possible turn, you do bad PR. Coming up in just seconds, working on Christmas Day. This is Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by pilot error.
Keep us out over the lake south of the city for now at 3,000 feet. but I'm not sure we're going to maintain 3,000 very easy.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Do you enjoy cheese balls and crackers over the holidays? Well, there's a backstory there, and I'll share it with you coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Season's greetings, Sterling on Sunday fans. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's Christmas show, I share a heartwarming story about a former NYPD member who consumed too much rum and eggnog. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Well, we're going to talk to Gary Arnell first, because others have made up excuses that they're going to talk to us later. So we're going to talk to Gary Arnell now. And Gary, I understand you're in the Christmas spirit because you're drinking eggnog. Is that true?
I am in the Christmas spirit because I am drinking eggnog. And I will tell you, Walter, that I too was going to tell you, I'll call you later. Because,
but would that be spiritual, Gary? No.
It was spiritual because I was doing a barucha prayer, a blessing over the eggnog on this Christmas show. And yeah, I wanted to just tell you a quick story, Walter. When I was about, I think I was 8 or 9 years old, my parents insisted that I go to work and get a job. So they got me a job at Christmas time at a place called White's Christmas Land. Now, I'm like 8 or 9 years old, and I'm working like 9-10 hours a day. Working papers? No. Just, you know, cash, here's the bucks, whatever. So I'm selling Christmas trees and ornaments and all this other stuff, Walter. I go home in his Jewish household, and what does Gary Arnell want since he's been around all of these Christmas ornaments and decorations all day? I'm asking my mother and father, Ruth and Morton Arnell, why can't the Arnells have a Christmas tree? And the thing that was so stressful to me, Walter, was that I never got a clear explanation, even from a religious perspective. We were just a middle-of-the-road, moderate Jewish household, but foreboding, not going to have one. And I never got a clear answer. And whenever I went to any of my relatives, Walter, my aunts, my uncles, say, how come we didn't have a Christmas? What are you talking about, Gary? That's a shanda. You know that Jews don't have Christmas trees. And to this day, I've done a little research trying to figure out, Walter, why Jews don't have Christmas trees in their home. And the one thing that I've taken away from the research is that many in the Christian faith, and in particular, some of the fundamentalist evangelicals think that if Christmas trees are in a Jewish home, that in essence, strap yourself in for this one, takes Christ out of Christmas. So, I don't understand. Now, to this day, I just have to tell you this, Walter. To this day, I'll even call it a Hanukkah bush. I want to have something in my house. I'll even put a Star of David on top of it or whatever. My family, no, taboo, can't do it, not going to happen. And so I've been traumatized, Walter, since I worked at White's Christmas Land. And I was around all this joy and the color and the aroma and the festivities. But as a Jew, I was left with my eggnog, and that's it. It's a sad moment in my life.
Now, my best friend as a child.
Yeah, it's a true story, by the way. Yeah.
Was Charles Weissman. And the Weissmans, as all people in New Jersey, started their life in Newark.
Yeah, and, right. That's true.
They all started in Newark. We all saw Goodbye Columbus, and everybody started in Newark.
Yeah.
And they liked Christmas trees. They had a Christmas tree, and Mrs. Weissman, one of her parents was Christian, and she went to St. Elizabeth's College.
Yeah.
But they wanted a Christmas tree. What they had to do in this Jewish apartment house in Newark was sneak it up the fire escape. They snuck the Christmas tree up the fire escape so that they could have it. But we've always had a menorah in our Catholic home.
Yes.
And I can't imagine for the life of me what the problem would be with, I mean, Bamberger's had Christmas trees.
That's right. Bamberger's.
Bamberger's had Christmas trees.
Let's see if we could... Orbach.
Orbach's had Christmas trees. Is Home Depot a Jewish name? I don't know.
I'm not sure, but what about Abraham and Strauss?
Abraham and Strauss and Abercrombie's.
And Abercrombie. Right. Oh, no. So that's it. So to this day, I still am in that battle, seriously, to try to have that representation.
Well, do you have a Christmas tree in your home?
That I can't get.
As an adult, do you have a Christmas tree in your home?
No, I'm not allowed.
Mrs. Arnell won't let you have a Christmas tree?
Mrs. Arnell and the children, Raina and Jamie, they will not even have a discussion with me. You know what I have in front of me, Walt? I'll do this quick. Actually, this is ironic. I have a thing from a dollar store. It says Cobblestone Corners Winter Village. And it's just like three, there's a tiny little Christmas tree. It must be about an inch and a half, a little plastic thing. And then there's these two figurines or figures or whatever the hell you call them. And this is it. I was told, and they're each about 1 inch, 1 inch by like a half inch. And they are to be kept on my desk and nowhere else outside of this area. Because, as I said, it's a shanda for a Jew to have Christmas in the house. What can I tell you?
That's Gary Arnell. We're talking with him about Christmas Eve from a Jewish perspective. And the other question I have for you, you've been drinking eggnog. Is it spiked or pure?
It is, it's spiked.
And what do you spike your eggnog with?
I use some rum.
Good. Well, here's the thing for me about eggnog. Mine isn't going to have any rum in it, but I believe it is the single most decadent thing that a middle-aged person can possibly consume.
What,
without
spiked,
the rum?
Spiked eggnog?
No, without the booze, it's still the most decadent thing a middle-aged person can consume because it has all of the bad ingredients in one place.
All of them, babe.
And it's deceptive because it seems so pleasant. And then you realize it's really poison death. If you're middle-aged, if you're a little overweight, if you have arterial problems, or if you're diabetic, it's death.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
What I don't understand,
you love it. So.
I love it. What I don't understand is why it's so expensive. Mm. You know, if you buy a quart of milk, it's going to be 89 cents. You buy a quart of eggnog, it's going to be $6.89.
Right. Well, it's...
What is that about?
It's inflation, babe. It's...
All right. Well, we have more questions about being Jewish on Christmas Eve with Gary Arnell coming up in just seconds. Good evening. Yes, this is a Christmas Eve original show, not a best of, not one of those embarrassing shows that you may hear other hosts do and try to phone in and get away with. I don't try to get away with anything. No, because, and there's a specific reason for it, I have to try much harder because I have no talent. This is Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by George Gilbert.
Get delicious Lancaster brand sirloin, porterhouse, or rib steak for only 79 cents a pound at your Acme Market.
Now, Gary, are you going to... Gary Arnell, you and I are talking on Christmas Eve.
Yes,
beautiful
sir.
Christmas Eve. And, Gary Arnell, are you ever actually going to be on the radio again from 3 to 5 on Saturdays on WPHT? Will you ever actually appear again?
Well, this is what happened. As soon as, we air Penn State, sometimes we air some of the Temple teams as well. And a lot of those games are on Saturday afternoons during the premium Gary Arnell broadcast time. And I will be, I'm looking at the schedule today, Walter, and the Arnell show will again be on more often than not Saturday afternoons live, 3 to 5 p.m. Yes, thank you for asking.
When will it be 3 hours, Gary?
I don't know. I need to speak to our brand manager, Stocker.
Greg Stocker, who's also part of the morning show, an important, essential part of the morning show.
Absolutely. Kyle and Company, great show. And yeah, no, I don't know. I've been lobbying for it, lobbying with diplomacy. I don't know. So, 3 hours would be great. So.
Now, I've been on WPHT for 9 years.
Wow.
I know. And I've been on the network for five. Mm-hmm. Now, in the hallways at WPHT, the gossip. Yeah. What is the gossip about the Sterling show?
So again, what are the ingredients in eggnog? the gossip on the Sterling show is, wow, it's a wide range. From, wow, it's the most creative thing that I've heard in talk radio in years. And the other end of the spectrum is, wait a minute, how did he take that topic and then somehow get into the next topic? And it sounded like a perfect segue, even though both of those topics were not related. And then, yeah, he's not railing on the Dems or the Republicans. It's an intriguingly entertaining show. So for the most part, sometimes, Walter, people do have this sort of look of, I don't know what the word is. Like
disgust?
No. They have like this look of, like the dog tilting its head a little bit to the right or to the left, you know, when the car is coming straight at it, like, what is it? But then you realize, and I'm not just saying this to be gratuitous. You and I have had a long time.
You can be gratuitous all you want.
All right, I'll be gratuitous because it's Christmas Eve. Why the hell not?
Sure.
It's just breaking the mold of what we have become so accustomed to, the Civil War, the branding, the politics, the left, the right. And this is, you get plenty of information, but it is, as I said, in an intriguingly entertaining venue. And Walter, we talk about this a lot, sometimes over an eggnog that's not spiked, but that's what people are looking for today. They want comedic intelligence. And I think that's what you provide.
Oh,
I do.
Oh,
yeah.
Like
comedic intelligence.
Emotional, what is it? Emotional maturity or...
No, I wouldn't take it that far.
No, but I'm saying there's that hot phrase, emotional maturity. I think that's it. But you've just come up with a new one, which is comedic what?
Comedic intelligence.
Wow. Well, that's certainly not guilty. We're not guilty of that here.
No.
I'm sure of that. The reason on my show that you can hear me go from one topic to another topic, and it sounds like it's supposed to be that way,
is
simply because I forget the end of stories.
Oh,
so I'm mid-thought, and then I start something new, but in fact, there was no transition. It just
so
kept
I'll
going.
Remember that on the Saturday show when I'm trying to, I'm endeavoring to go from one segment to the next and do it as seamlessly as the master does. I just have to drop off the end of whatever story that I'm on and then just plow into the next one.
You have to assume that if you don't give the end of a story, the listener will think that they missed something.
That's very true.
You know, it's not your fault or mine. It's that they missed something.
Absolutely.
And they are guilty of inattention.
Yes. That's what it's all about.
Inattention.
Inattention.
I always wondered, though, I was raised as a Catholic, even though now we know I'm Jewish.
Right.
But I was raised as a Catholic. We know I'm Jewish just to confuse the Monsignor. But I was raised as a Catholic, and you have to understand, Catholics were jealous of Jewish kids because you had 8 days.
Yes, that's correct. We do.
You had 8 days of gifts.
Yes.
And I point this out to my mother.
Yeah.
My WASP mother.
Yes.
And she would say, yeah, well, you got more than 8 gifts. That was her answer.
You didn't need the 8 days. Listen, can I just ask you a personal question?
Well, yeah.
All right. You were raised a Catholic.
Mm.
You realize you got some Jewish stuff flowing through you now. You got Jew in your DNA.
Yeah.
Jews, for the most part, are circumcised a couple of days after they are born. The bris.
Yeah.
And you hope that the moil, the guy that's got the schnatter, the knife, hasn't had spiked eggnog.
Yeah.
So what I want to know from you, I said it's personal. You can just forget it. You say, Arnell, no.
Yeah, I don't see how we're going to forget this.
I'm just wondering, like, you're a Jew now. Did that ever happen to you, or is this...
You have to remember, gym class, you have to remember that this wasn't a Jewish-Christian thing. This was a cultural, societal thing. And there were very few non-circumcised kids.
Oh, my. That's a whole other story.
Very few non-circumcised kids, Christian or Jewish. It was more of a cultural, societal thing.
I got you.
But far more scandalous than that conversation is the bizarreness that took place when you and I were still in high school, which was if your school had a pool, boys swam naked.
Oh, man.
In public schools where there were pools, boys swam naked. Now, you tell a kid that today, you tell people that that's
boys
how it was.
Boys swam naked in a public school pool?
And at the Y. And this was true throughout America until the mid-70s.
Really?
And the argument was that the material was bad for the filters. And we used to say, well, yeah, but what if the girls wear swimsuits? Yeah. Well, their suits are made out of different material.
So like, the material, the material was not good for the filter.
That was the argument. The reason I know that's a lie is because in every school system through America, if you say, well, why did the boys swim naked in the in the pool at gym? Yeah. They will give you a different answer. Every school system will come up with a different answer. And then sometime in the 70s, there was some level of awareness of this is insane. And it stopped. Magically, the filters were improved.
I never heard boys swimming nude in a public school environment.
Well, I would tell you to search it on Google, but the cops might arrive tomorrow.
They might come here when they check that out. Yeah,
yeah, no, you don't want to do that. Well, I hope you have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, sir.
I hope you have a great Christmas week. I'm glad you're going to be on the radio on 1210 WPHT. And no matter where you are, you can hear Gary Arnell from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturdays. If you go to 1210WPHT.com and click the live stream, you can hear him live. And it's a stunningly, it's a stunningly good stream. Odyssey has really put together an outstanding capability to hear the shows on all of their radio stations.
Yeah, they're doing great with the streaming and great streaming numbers, and kudos to them, seriously. And if I keep doing that, maybe I'll get to 3 hours. So, kudos to them. So,
Gary Arnell, you're a great friend. I wish you a happy holiday. Thanks for being on Sterling.
And your beautiful, beautiful family, sir.
At Christmas. Thanks a lot. All right, coming up, you and I are going to talk about working on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and what that's like. This is an original Christmas Eve show of Walter Sterling. That would be me. And this is Sterling at Christmas. We appreciate your correspondence. Send me a note at waltermsterling@gmail.com. Sterling at Christmas.
Who was this man? What was he? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
I have worked on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Have you? Let's talk about that in seconds. This is Sterling at Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Do you enjoy cheese balls and crackers over the holidays? Well, there's a backstory there, and I'll share it with you coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Season's greetings, Sterling on Sunday fans. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's Christmas show, I share a heartwarming story about a former NYPD member who consumed too much rum and eggnog. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Here we are in Christmas Eve. Oh, let me answer this. Let me just answer this. Who's this? Meredith, you're on the air. Well, it was a mistake, but this is my Meredith. It's Christmas Eve. I'm doing the Christmas Eve show right now for Sterling on Sunday. And
it's not Christmas Eve.
It's nice of you to call in on Christmas Eve because we're doing the Christmas Eve show right now.
It is Christmas Eve.
It's Christmas Eve. Now, could you please share what you hope Santa will bring? Do you have an idea of what you hope Santa will bring?
I want shoes.
You want what?
I want shoes.
Oh, you want shoes. What kind of shoes?
I want Uggs and I want Converse.
And what Uggs and Converse, all right? Is there anything else that you would like?
Makeup,
yeah. From where? Who's speaking? Is that Eliza?
Yeah.
She has a roommate named Eliza. And she's 18, and you know she had that terrible car wreck, and she had surgery a few days ago, so I hope you're healing well.
Yes.
And I'm sure we're going to have a nice Christmas day. So I love you, Meredith, and
I love you too.
We'll talk again soon. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
That is my perfect 18-year-old. Meredith, who's attending SUNY Purchase, State University of New York at Purchase, and she's 18, and that's how you know that she wants shoes. The 21-year-old wants bedding. She says, oh my God, I'm an adult now. I want bedding. She wants comforters and comforter covers, and that's her dream, is bedding. Meanwhile, the 11-year-old only wants Roblox toys, Minecraft toys, Sims toys. What's the other big thing that she wants? Lego toys. But whatever she wants, I'm sure Santa will bring her, because that's just the kind of Santa it is. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's Christmas Eve, and it's time for you and me. Did you ever work on Christmas Eve? Did you ever work on Christmas Day? I believe the very best day of the year to travel, to do airport travel, is Christmas Day. Because, first of all, the airports are empty. Anybody who's working at the airport on Christmas Day is getting paid triple golden overtime. They're very happy. The happiest people you will ever see working at an airport are on Christmas Day. But the best thing is I lust to be upgraded. My whole mission in life is to be upgraded to first class. After you've flown 2 million miles on American Airlines, as I have, your only hope in life is a first-class seat. That is your only hope. Now, in the past year, on Delta, and I think American, but I know on Delta, they have actually curtailed their frequent flyer programs. They have cut down on the privileges for people who are at a certain level. They've taken them down. I was talking to Pierre Bouvard, who works at Cumulus, and he was calling me from an airplane that was sitting on the runway. And I said, well, how's your first class seat? He said, I'm in coach. I said, that's impossible, because I know he must have flown 3 million miles. He said, no, I'm in coach. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, they've cut down on our privileges. We don't have the upgrades that we used to have. It's harder to get upgrades, and that's just stupid. That, you know, airlines don't want to be hated. Okay, well, that's why you're hated. Not only are the seats too small, too narrow, the food sucks. Let me share with you some airplane pornography. Are you ready? There used to be a time, and this will ring true in your ear now that you're traveling this week and next. There used to be a time when you got on an airplane and they took your coat in coach. They took your coat and they'd make you stand at the door and take your carry-on and put it in the overhead for you, so that it was packed properly. What seat are you at? Okay, and then they'd go down to your seat and put it in the overhead properly. Can you imagine that? Today they won't touch it. They won't help you with that bag no matter what. Isn't going to happen. Also, now this is conspiratorial to even mention this. You used to be able to smoke on an airplane. And you could smoke a cigar and a pipe on an airplane. 30 years ago, I smoked cigars. No more. Haven't had a cigar in 25 years. But 30 years ago, I'd smoked cigars. I was across the aisle in first class from a guy in a green leisure suit. Remember those? The 70s? In a green leisure suit. and I was smoking a cigar. He calls the flight attendant over, and he says, "Would you please tell him that his cigar offends me?" And she whispered to me, she said, "Sir, could you put that out? That cigar offends him." And I said, "Tell him that, his leisure suit offends me." "Oh, I can't do that. Oh, I can't do that." It was different. Now, oh, and they'd hand you a magazine or newspaper. They'd come around newspapers and magazines. Which one do you want? And then even in coach, on a, you know, 3-hour flight, not a 20-hour flight, 3-hour flight, they'd say, "Do you want the fish, the chicken, or the steak?" And they'd have three different kinds of desserts. They'd have an ice cream sundae with butterscotch, hot fudge, or strawberries. Is this all coming back to you now? Or is this such ancient knowledge that I might as well know how to build the pyramids? But that's how it was. Well, now, when I go to an airport on Christmas Day, it gets close to that in that I will look at them at the counter. I'll say, "You know, I'm old and I'm tired and I'd really appreciate an upgrade." And every time I get the upgrade on Christmas Day. One guy was even funny. He says, "Oh, you're Chairman Platinum, aren't you?" Which is the highest level of frequent flyer. "You're Chairman Platinum, aren't you?" And I'm like, yeah, I'm Chairman Platinum. "Yes, of course, we upgrade you, Mr. Sterling, here, no problem." But it's a sweet airport on Christmas Day. The planes take off and leave on time. The staff is happy. There's festive decoration, at least for an airport. And it's very relaxed. It's a treat to fly on Christmas Day. But I salute and I respect anybody who's working Christmas Day, because it's usually one of two groups of people. It's people starting in a given industry or getting close to retirement. Close to retirement, they get bonus brownie points like crazy and extra pay, lots of extra pay. And then if you're starting out, you might get a position and an experience that you wouldn't get normal working hours, because they're just happy you showed up. They'll let you do things you wouldn't normally get to do. I will tell you about my experience working on Christmas Day coming up in just seconds. This is Christmas Eve, and this is Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
Ultimately, you got the car back.
Yes, ma'am.
And you say it was damaged.
Yes, ma'am.
Who cares?
Oh, we love Judge Judy. We just love her. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Christmas Eve. You and I are spending this very special night together. It's a magic night. No matter where you drive on the interstate, you can look over to your right or your left, and there will be a glow in the forest. There'll be a glow. And it's usually one porch light, one Christmas light, a trailer sitting by itself, a house trailer sitting by itself with some Christmas decorations, and the snow and the crystalline air magnify it in a beautiful way. The whole scene is frosted and beautiful. And these are the gifts. I like to think that if you're not happy, if I'm not happy, I'm not paying attention. Because I was given 5 senses. And it's the sense of smell, hearing, speech, sight, and sound. And you know, the thing about the 5 senses is they are all present tense. I do not have a sense to see the future. I do not have a sense to see the past. I can't change the past. I can't change the future. But if I just pay attention to what I was born with, touch, smell, sight, hearing, there's always some good news. There's always something good that I can see or hear that's comforting, relaxing, and makes me feel grateful. The only time I ever would get depressed or sad is if I can imagine the future, or if I can think I can rewrite the past. Those are lies. And to live in a lie is a big waste of time. But my friend, I've noticed that my friends, when they're sad or I'm depressed, a lot of people claim to be depressed when they're really just sad, or they're just not paying attention to the moment, which is filled with happiness. I'm sitting here in my laundry room. I'm staring at a clock, and I have one little light and a lot of Christmas tree lights. I'm in a laundry room. It's warm and comfortable. And if I look around the mess, I just smile because I am blessed. I get to speak with you, and you get to speak with me, and we get to communicate. Well, that's a blessing. On this night, you may have trouble falling asleep. Either you're too excited, or maybe you're sad, or you don't want to see somebody tomorrow. Let me share some tips that have worked for me. I'm not saying these are the answer and this is what you have to do. I'm just telling you what's worked for me. When it comes to having to see somebody tomorrow, the truth is I'm over 18 and I don't have to see anybody. I'm over 18 and I'm a volunteer. If I show up at somebody's house, a relative, a friend, and I don't really want to see them, well, I'm a volunteer. People sign up to be miserable. I've noticed this. Oh, God, I hate seeing him. Well, why are you seeing him? Oh, I don't want to go to that party. It's not going to be any fun. Don't go to the party. A common trait of introverts is that we like to have plans canceled. We love it when somebody comes to us and says, oh, we were supposed to go there next Saturday, but that's been canceled. And we're like, oh, thank goodness. An extrovert will be, oh, gee, that's really sad. I wanted to see all of those people. But you and I, we're like, oh, no, no, no. But if you want to fall asleep, this is what's worked for me. It's worked for me better than anything else. The truth is, if I have trouble falling asleep, it's because I'm living in the lie. I'm either imagining what could happen or should happen. They should do this. Why won't they do this? They should do it. I'm either imagining what should happen or I'm rewriting the past. I'm thinking about the past. You know, if this had only happened, or I wish they had done this or said this. Those are lies. I can't change the past. I can't predict the future. That's why in most countries in the world it is illegal to be a fortune teller, because it's a fraud. Only here is it welcomed and embraced. Not in Romania, the way you think. No, no, here, just here. We embrace this. But if I think about what I know to be true, tonight is Christmas Eve, tonight is Christmas Eve, tonight is Christmas Eve. If I think about what I know to be true, I will fall right to sleep because my brain can only settle on the truth. My brain can only calm down when all of the cards and folders are properly filed. But if I'm predicting the future or trying to rewrite the past, that folder can't get filed. And it's going to bounce around in my head and keep me up, and keep me anxious. And who needs that? It's Christmas Eve. And it's a great time to think about the good news. I'm not saying, you know, think about what you should be grateful for. It's none of my business. But if I think about the good news, I'll go right to sleep. My good news is I have an 11-year-old angel named Samantha. And when Samantha was born, 10 seconds in, she was a unique child. My wife and I are in the hospital room in New York City. And it's about 9:30 at night. And the room's pretty dark. And there's my wife. There I am. And between us in a bassinet is Samantha. And it's quiet. And then we hear, "Ooh, coo, coo, coo." And I'm like, it's New York. There must be a pigeon on the air conditioner. There's a pigeon cooing on the air conditioner at 9 at night. And I go to the window, and I look for the pigeon. There's no pigeon. There's no bird. Coo, coo, coo. And it's coming from the bassinet. And Samantha, at 6 hours old, is cooing. 6-hour-old babies just cry, but not Samantha. She was cooing because my wife and I decided, well, Samantha was happy to be here. She was looking forward to meeting us. And this is the happiest child I have ever known. And my prayer for this year, my gift for this year would be if my Samantha, who's 11 and bright and pretty and charming and a con artist, my Samantha can't read. And the gift that I want more than anything is for Samantha to be able to read. That is the only way she's going to be able to have the life she deserves, the life that she wants. And I think it's more than autism or anything like that. It's more than that, because when faced with the possibility of having to read, she reacts in a very physical way. She does not want to read. No, no, no. She screams, runs out of the room. And I'm starting to think, and this is true for some people, that maybe it hurts her to try to read. Maybe it's hard on her eyes and on her brain circuits, and it's just too difficult to actually try to read because she can't read. She speaks, you know, she's 11, she speaks like an 8.5-year-old. She's fine. She can't write at all, and she can barely write her name, but she knows her name. She's not dumb at all. She just has some learning delays. I hate to say disabilities. They're not disabilities. They're challenges. She has the brain power to get through these challenges if we find the right pathway, if we find the right guides to get her through this. That is my prayer for this year, that my Samantha will be able to read. And it's quite the challenge. I hope you get what you want for Christmas and the holidays. And remember, we're all volunteers. So if there's something missing, something you really wanted and you didn't get it, why not just not say anything? And then this week, go buy it for yourself, because you deserve it. You deserve it just like you deserve the bucket list items you've got, including the trip to the French Riviera. Can you believe I said that? But my fantasy has always been to meet you and to go to the French Riviera. And now Colette Travel has said, you know what? Walter, would you like to take your Midnight Misfits to the French Riviera? And I'm like, yes. And they have put together an exquisite package, 9-day trip to the French Riviera with other Midnight Misfits. A whole group of introverts staring out the window. We'll have the best time because we're going to spend 9 days at one. We're going to go to one hotel and travel from that hotel in Nice. We're going to go to Saint-Tropez, to flower gardens, perfume factories, and my favorite, Monte Carlo. We're going to go to Monaco. And yes, that's where the casino is. Casino at Monte Carlo. No, it's called something else. The casino. Anyway, I'll think of it in a sec. It's Christmas Eve. My brain scrambled. It's going to be a great trip. Find out about this trip. Very few slots, very few opportunities, but we got a whole year to plan it. Go to waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. Find out about our trip to the Riviera.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by pilot error.
Keep us out over the lake south of the city for now at 3,000 feet, but I'm not sure we're going to maintain 3,000 very easy.
But I don't know why we're repeating the rejoins. Why are we repeating those? We already did the pilot error, you know, a half hour ago. These are mysteries to me. All right, good evening. Merry Christmas. Happy Christmas Eve. I hope you're having a peaceful and quiet time on I-81, I-5, I-4. You and I are together. This is Sterling at Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Do you enjoy cheese balls and crackers over the holidays? Well, there's a backstory there, and I'll share it with you coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Season's greetings, Sterling on Sunday fans. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's Christmas show, I share a heartwarming story about a former NYPD member who consumed too much rum and eggnog. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
There are certain versions of certain songs that we don't hear anymore. And this is one of them. This is the Ray Conniff Singers. And I'm going to tell you a radio story and a Christmas story. Now, if you go into a radio station, the aroma that you smell is cleaning products, is a fresh vacuum. You don't smell what you used to smell when you walked into a radio station when this song was coming over the speakers. First of all, this song used to be coming over speakers that were powered by tubes. Come into a radio station at this time of year, and you'd hear that over the big giant speakers that were in the lobby, in the hallway, and you'd hear what was on the air throughout the building because it was one radio station per building. Now they've got 7, 8, 9, 10 radio stations, and the tragedy of that is to settle, gee, which speaker do we play? Which station do we play out of the speakers? They play none. So the pulse, the thump of great radio through the hallways, into the lobby, that's gone. That doesn't happen anymore. But there was an aroma to radio stations that doesn't exist anymore. It was an aroma of hot tubes and plywood and speaker covers. And vinyl, because the primary products that were in most radio stations were tubes and vinyl records and cigarettes and burnt coffee. And sometimes old Charlie, the morning man, would hide a bottle of scotch under the turntable, which would thump. You know, it had weights in it, and it would thump. But there was a very distinctive aroma. If you've ever found an old record player, if you've ever found one in your garage or at your grandparents' house, and you open up the record player, it has a very distinctive aroma. It has a scent that doesn't exist anymore because it's a combination of vinyl and plywood and applique and tubes. Tubes have an aroma and a warmth. That's why a lot of real musicians like Bob Dylan says, I'm not going to record on a digital set. He records everything on tubes, on a reel-to-reel recorder that's powered by tubes. Dylan won't record digital. My first job was at a radio station 50 miles from my home, 50 miles. And I got it before I could drive. My parents would take turns driving me 50 miles each way to get to this job because everybody in radio has the same answer to the question of, why are you in radio? How did you get into radio? We all have the same sad answer. I got my first job when I was 15. I hung out at the radio station near my house until they let me sweep the floors. And then later, what'd you do? Well, then they let me tear the news off of the teletypes or print it out. Yeah, then what'd you do? Well, then I got to do production. What does that mean? Well, I got to take the commercials that came in from advertising agencies and put them into the system, or in the old days, put them on tape cartridges, which look like 8-track cartridges. Everybody has the same sad story. It all started at 15. The day I got my working papers was the day I got work at a radio station. But I'm not unique everybody I know in radio has the same story. It was not a profession. It's a calling, like a priest with the same sex life. Absolutely identical, except for that stuff. But it's an abstinence life. And we would do anything to do anything at any radio station. Anything we could get to do, we would do. And remember, my radio station was 50 miles from my home. And my first job at a radio station was this radio station would carry high school sports, which is a really smart thing to do. A local radio station, it did play-by-play of the high school teams, the high school football teams. One problem. The problem was this was what was known as a daytimer station, which pretty much doesn't exist anymore. A daytimer station was an AM station that signed on the air when the sun went up and signed off the air when the sun went down. It was not on the air at night, because at night radio signals go further, much further. They can go. One time I was in the Pocono Mountains in the summer, and I heard a commercial that said, "That's this Sunday at the Moscone Center." I'm like, "What?" And I was getting a skip wave. I was getting a sky wave from San Francisco. I could hear San Francisco on my radio. No, not with a stream, because streams are stupid. The name of a brand name of most streams is Buffering Now. No, this was just over the air. I could hear San Francisco in the Pocono Mountains. It's amazing. Well, the problem was that we were carrying high school football games, but the station had to sign off at 4:45. And sometimes the game wouldn't be over, and the listener would not hear the final score. They wouldn't hear the last quarter. And what would we do? We would record it at the station and play it back at 8 the next morning in morning drive. We'd play the end of the football game the next morning. And my job is the news director of the station did the play-by-play, and the owner of the station did the color reporting. And we'd go to these high schools and stand in these disgusting stands, these little dugouts, wherever we could. And they would each do their role, play-by-play, color. And the local Coca-Cola distributor sponsored it and would come to the booth and hand cash to the owner of the station for the sponsorship of the show. My job was I had a control board in my lap with two knobs. One for the news director and one for the play-by-play. And one for the color. One for the color, one for the play-by-play. And I was in charge of those knobs. That's what I did. But, oh, my gosh, I was in show business. And I got $25 for the season. And I didn't care. Do you know why? Because my paycheck had an icon of a radio tower on it. I got a radio tower icon on my check for $25 for the season. That was a hell of a day. But that same year, I said to my mom, you know, I can work on Christmas at the radio station. And she was, what? What are you talking about? And I said, no, I can work on Christmas at the radio station. And I'll tell you how that went coming up in just seconds. Good evening. Merry Christmas. Happy Christmas Eve. This is Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by pilot error.
Keep us out over the lake south of the city for now at 3,000 feet. But I'm not sure we're going to maintain 3,000 very easy.
But I don't know why we're repeating the rejoins. Why are we repeating those? We already did the pilot error, you know, a half hour ago. These are mysteries to me. All right, good evening. Merry Christmas. Happy Christmas Eve. I hope you're having a peaceful and quiet time on I-81, I-5, I-4. You and I are together. This is Sterling at Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Do you enjoy cheese balls and crackers over the holidays? Well, there's a backstory there, and I'll share it with you coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Season's greetings, Sterling on Sunday fans. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's Christmas show, I share a heartwarming story about a former NYPD member who consumed too much rum and eggnog. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
There are certain versions of certain songs that we don't hear anymore. And this is one of them. This is the Ray Conniff Singers. And I'm going to tell you a radio story and a Christmas story. Now, if you go into a radio station, the aroma that you smell is cleaning products, is a fresh vacuum. You don't smell what you used to smell when you walked into a radio station when this song was coming over the speakers. First of all, this song used to be coming over speakers that were powered by tubes. Come into a radio station at this time of year, and you'd hear that over the big giant speakers that were in the lobby, in the hallway, and you'd hear what was on the air throughout the building because it was one radio station per building. Now they've got 7, 8, 9, 10 radio stations, and the tragedy of that is to settle, gee, which speaker do we play? Which station do we play out of the speakers? They play none. So the pulse, the thump of great radio through the hallways, into the lobby, that's gone. That doesn't happen anymore. But there was an aroma to radio stations that doesn't exist anymore. It was an aroma of hot tubes and plywood and speaker covers and vinyl, because the primary products that were in most radio stations were tubes and vinyl records and cigarettes and burnt coffee, and sometimes old Charlie, the morning man, would hide a bottle of scotch under the turntable, which would thump. You know, it had weights in it, it would thump. But there was a very distinctive aroma. If you've ever found an old record player, if you've ever found one in your garage or at your grandparents' house, and you open up the record player, it has a very distinctive aroma. It has a scent that doesn't exist anymore because it's a combination of vinyl and plywood and applique and tubes. Tubes have an aroma and a warmth. That's why a lot of real musicians like Bob Dylan says, I'm not going to record on a digital set. He records everything on tubes, on a reel-to-reel recorder that's powered by tubes. Dylan won't record digital. My first job was at a radio station 50 miles from my home, 50 miles, and I got it before I could drive. My parents would take turns driving me 50 miles each way to get to this job because everybody in radio has the same answer to the question of, why are you in radio? How did you get into radio? We all have the same sad answer. I got my first job when I was 15. I hung out at the radio station near my house until they let me sweep the floors. And then later, what'd you do? Well, then they let me tear the news off of the teletypes or print it out. Yeah, then what'd you do? Well, then I got to do production. What does that mean? Well, I got to take the commercials that came in from advertising agencies and put them into the system, or in the old days, put them on tape cartridges, which look like 8-track cartridges. Everybody has the same sad story. It all started at 15. The day I got my working papers was the day I got work at a radio station. But I'm not unique. everybody I know in radio has the same story. It was not a profession. It's a calling, like a priest with the same sex life. Absolutely identical, except for that stuff. But it's an abstinence life. And we would do anything to do anything at any radio station. Anything we could get to do, we would do. And remember, my radio station was 50 miles from my home. And my first job at a radio station was this radio station would carry high school sports, which is a really smart thing to do. A local radio station, it did play-by-play of the high school teams, the high school football teams. One problem. The problem was this was what was known as a daytimer station, which pretty much doesn't exist anymore. A daytimer station was an AM station that signed on the air when the sun went up and signed off the air when the sun went down. It was not on the air at night, because at night radio signals go further, much further. They can go. One time I was in the Pocono Mountains in the summer, and I heard a commercial that said, "That's this Sunday at the Moscone Center." I'm like, "What?" And I was getting a skip wave. I was getting a sky wave from San Francisco. I could hear San Francisco on my radio. No, not with a stream, because streams are stupid. The name of a brand name of most streams is Buffering Now. No, this was just over the air. I could hear San Francisco in the Pocono Mountains. It's amazing. Well, the problem was that we were carrying high school football games, but the station had to sign off at 4:45. And sometimes the game wouldn't be over, and the listener would not hear the final score. They wouldn't hear the last quarter. And what would we do? We would record it at the station and play it back at 8 the next morning in morning drive. We'd play the end of the football game the next morning. And my job is the news director of the station did the play-by-play, and the owner of the station did the color reporting. And we'd go to these high schools and stand in these disgusting stands, these little dugouts, wherever we could. And they would each do their role, play-by-play, color. And the local Coca-Cola distributor sponsored it and would come to the booth and hand cash to the owner of the station for the sponsorship of the show. My job was I had a control board in my lap with two knobs. One for the news director and one for the play-by-play. And one for the color. One for the color, one for the play-by-play. And I was in charge of those knobs. That's what I did. But, oh, my gosh, I was in show business. And I got $25 for the season. And I didn't care. Do you know why? Because my paycheck had an icon of a radio tower on it. I got a radio tower icon on my check for $25 for the season. That was a hell of a day. But that same year, I said to my mom, you know, I can work on Christmas at the radio station. And she was, what? What are you talking about? And I said, no, I can work on Christmas at the radio station. And I'll tell you how that went coming up in just seconds. Good evening. Merry Christmas. Happy Christmas Eve. This is Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by the words of Steve Harvey.
Okay, you want truth? This is why men lie. Because we are afraid of your reaction to the truth.
And that is how to get to sleep. If you and I count our blessings, and if we're truthful to what we have that's terrific, we'll fall right to sleep, because it's the truth. The brain can go to sleep on the truth. It can't go to sleep on a fib. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is the special Christmas Eve, Sterling on Sunday, except it's Sterling at Christmas. My first job in radio was at a little AM station in Northwest New Jersey. And it was a daytimer station. It signed on when the sun went on, and it signed off when the sun went down. The owner of the station said, "Do you want to work on Christmas Day?" And I said, "Of course." And then he said, "Well, could you work all day Christmas?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So I would sign the station on and sign the station off. I told my mother this at the age of 17. "Mom, I'm going to go and sign the station on and sign the station off." "When?" "On Christmas Day." "What?" "Yeah, I'm going to be there all day Christmas." "You're what? You want to do that?" I said, I have to do it. It's a calling. You don't understand. I have to do it." On Christmas morning, remember, I had to drive an hour and 15 minutes. I was very afraid that I'd be late. So I woke up like at 5 in the morning, and I started to drive on Route 22 in New Jersey. Route 22 is the most American of roads. It features places such as the Leaning Tower of Pizza, which has a replica of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but it's a pizza joint, and it's great pizza. And it has the Flagship, which was originally a nightclub. It was across from Denison Close, Route 22 near the Flagship, and Denison Close was probably a house of ill repute. But it was right across the street from a nightclub, so it was kind of perfect. And that's Route 22. I drove the length of Route 22 from my home in Maplewood to Washington Borough, New Jersey, which ironically is where Gene Shepherd lived. And we'll talk about Gene in the next hour. It's where Gene Shepherd lived. I get on the road, and there was about 2 inches of snow, pristine, light powder snow. And now I'm driving the length of Route 22 at 5:30 on Christmas morning, and the weirdest thing, Route 22 has lights. The weirdest thing is, I swear to you, for an hour and 15 minutes, there wasn't one other vehicle in either direction. No cop cars sitting there. I could have gone 100 miles an hour. I did the speed limit because I did not want to get stopped and screw up signing on the station. Now I get to the station, and my job was to play pre-recorded hours of Christmas music. Very well designed, by the way, now that I know what I know, and to do the news live. So I was supposed to play pre-recorded Christmas music and do the news live. And I get there, and I'm like, you know, this is great. And I had such a romantic idea about what this would be like. My romantic idea was local people will come to the local radio station and bring me food. They would come to the local radio station and say, "Merry Christmas, Walter. Welcome to the community. We're glad you're here. Thank you for playing this great Christmas music." And I got there, and I sat down, and I wrote the first newscast about a pristine, beautiful snow has fallen upon Northwest New Jersey this morning on Christmas Day. And I wrote it as dramatically and as flourishy as I could. And then I'd play the next hour of pre-recorded tapes. That's what I did. And it was so well done that if the tape broke, they had all of the vinyl records lined up and a script as to how to play them in order. This was locally done. It wasn't syndicated. It was in retrospect, it was a lot of work they did on this. And they sold it. They sold the time. God bless them. Well, now I realized that there were some problems in working on Christmas Day that I had not anticipated. Problem number one was that on Christmas Day, I'm in an office building, the Washington Bank building. I'm in the bank building on the second floor. And I realized after about, an hour or two that there was no heat coming up. And I did not know where or how or if I should turn on the heat, so therefore I did not turn on the heat. And it's 20 degrees outside and quickly becoming 20 degrees inside. I have my coat on. I dare not go out to my car because I was afraid I was going to lock myself out of the building and that would have been a disaster. I imagined every disaster possible. But the thing that kept me going was they're going to bring me food. People from the community will just come and offer Christmas gifts and Christmas cake and pies, and it will be a wonderful radio Christmas. And what happened that day? I will share with you coming up. We'll go into more detail about working on Christmas Day. Did you ever work Christmas Day? Send me a note, waltermsterling@gmail.com, waltermsterling@gmail.com. It'd be fun to share working on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day experiences. I have so much respect. Are you listening to me in a city bus? Are you a city bus driver? On Christmas Eve, you are my hero. Driving a train conductor, you are my hero. A FedEx truck, the last packages, the United Parcel trucks, welcome. You and I are in this together. We're working on Christmas Eve. We work on Christmas Day. We get it done. And at an airport, the airports and the hospitals, doctors headed in for the third shift, nurses headed in for the third shift. You are true American heroes. And you're working at an Army base, a Navy base, a military base, keeping us safe. Thank you very much. And my friends in the police, you are my heroes. And we're going to hear from Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective. And he has a great Christmas story. All of that coming up for you. This is Sterling on Christmas Eve.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Yes, I worked all day Christmas Day when I was 17. My mother was horrified, and what happened to me on that day taught me a lot about life. Good evening. Merry Christmas. It's now Christmas Day on the East Coast. Santa's arriving. We're going to have a spectacular Christmas. This is Sterling on Christmas Eve.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Do you enjoy cheese balls and crackers over the holidays? Well, there's a backstory there, and I'll share it with you coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Season's greetings, Sterling on Sunday fans. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's Christmas show, I share a heartwarming story about a former NYPD member who consumed too much rum and eggnog. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Oh, my friend, I want you to imagine a radio station many years ago when everything was powered by tubes and the speakers were huge. They were pieces of furniture and the music came out of turntables. And under the turntables were cartons of cigarettes and scotch. And the aroma of burnt coffee and cigarettes and vinyl and tubes, it was intoxicating to a radio geek like me. When the owner of the first radio station I worked at said, would you be willing to work Christmas Day? I said, yes. I didn't even think about it. What I didn't realize, he meant Christmas Day, all day. And I said, yes, I will work Christmas Day, all day. I drove an hour and 15 minutes to the radio station, 20 degrees outside, second floor of a bank building. I get in there, I turn on the station, the tubes, the aroma, the cigarettes, the coffee. It was just intoxicating. I was in charge of this radio station. It was my radio station for a whole day, a whole day. And my job was to do newscasts, and between that to play the tapes of the Christmas music, which was sponsored. They actually sold it. God bless them. They knew how to make money then. Well, now I'm there about 2 hours, and I realize that there is no heat in the bank building on Christmas Day, and I don't know where to turn it on. And even if I did know, I'm not so sure I would have had the guts to turn it on because, you know, it was a bank building. Now I have my coat on, and I'm freezing. And there's a coffee vending machine not a coffee machine, not a coffee pot thing like you have now. It was a vending machine that had powdered milk and powdered sugar. And well, there it was, and I didn't have any coins. And I imagined that people were going to bring food and baskets of goodies because it was Christmas Day, and this was a local radio station. I imagined that all day because I had brought with me one sandwich. I don't know what I imagined I was going to eat for 12 hours, but I only brought one sandwich and nothing else. I had no heat, no coffee, nothing else to drink. And I had one sandwich, which was gone pretty fast. I didn't have breakfast. I didn't have breakfast before I left. I was afraid to be late. I couldn't be late. I had to drive an hour and 15 minutes to get there to turn on the station. But the whole time I kept thinking, isn't anyone going to bring the kid food? Isn't any local friendly, a priest, a minister, listeners, isn't someone going to bring food? Now, I was doing newscasts, so I couldn't ask for it. If I was a disc jockey or a talk show host, I could have just asked for it and risked my life with listener food. You know, there are many myths in radio about eating food from listeners. Probably not the best idea. By 4:30, the station was going to sign off the air. 4:45 was the shortest day. December is the shortest broadcast day for a daytimer. A station that signs on when the sun comes up and signs off when the sun goes down. There used to be thousands of those stations. There are very few now. I don't even know if there are any. I know there shouldn't be any. That I'm darn sure about. At one point, I got one phone call. The owner of the station called. Everything all right? Now, he lived so far away, and the signal was so small, he couldn't hear. There was no way for him to actually hear the station. If he got in his car in his driveway, he'd hear static. He'd have to drive 10 miles to maybe hear something. He didn't know if we were on. And he also sounded like maybe he had been enjoying Christmas spirit. Sounded a little Christmas spirity. I love that guy. Imagine being so insane as to give a 15-year-old a job at a radio station and then entrusting a 17-year-old with your entire radio station for a whole day. But I was in show business, boy. I was in show business, starving, freezing, no coffee. But I was in show business. My mother in tears. Oh, how could you be away on Christmas Day? Oh. And I was. I never did that again, by the way. I never worked all day Christmas again. But you might be at a hospital or driving the bus or a taxi or an Uber driver or working at a hospital, a nurse, a doctor, I salute you, an officer and the fireman. Sadly, this is usually a busy day for firemen because people are stupid. I hope at your fire department that doesn't happen. I hope you don't have that problem. But this is Walter Sterling on Christmas Eve, and here's the end of the Christmas story. The end of the Christmas story is now I am leaving the radio station. And I am starving. I haven't eaten all day. I had no coffee all day. I had no heat all day. But well, it was Hollywood. I was in show business. Oh, my God. It was fantastic. And I opened the door, and I almost fell flat on my butt. Fell flat on my face. Because I almost tripped over a basket of goodies. A listener had, in fact, without a note, quietly, sweetly left me a basket with some treats, Christmas cookies, snacks. I got my Merry Christmas. Good evening. Santa's here on the East Coast. It's 15 minutes into Christmas Day. You're with me, Walter Sterling, and this is Sterling on Christmas.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Harvey Holiday.
Late on a Sunday night, it's Holiday with love music, and it's so sad to see good love go bad.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Season's greetings, Walter. It's your old pal, retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari, and I'm here to tell you a Christmas story. It was early in my career, the late 80s, and as a rookie cop, I always looked up to the old-timers, and there was a cop there that had a couple of years on me. He actually reminded me of John Belushi. He was short, loud, a lot of fun, always the life of the party, big party guy. You could always count on him for doing something wild and crazy. Well, it was the night before Christmas, and this cop had an arrest, so his prisoner needed treatment, and he wound up taking him to St. Barnabas Hospital in the Bronx for treatment. So while the prisoner is being looked after, the cop realizes that a couple of nurses and doctors are having a Christmas party in the back. So he decides to partake and starts having a couple of shots with the doctors and nurses. Now, NYPD policy strictly prohibits NYPD members, especially in uniform, from consuming alcohol. This didn't stop this partying cop. Well, after a few hours, the prisoner was done. He takes the prisoner and brings him to Bronx Central Booking. And he lodges the prisoner in the cells. Well, back in those days, you had to go and see the district attorney the following morning to file charges. Well, now the alcohol's kicking in, and this cop isn't really feeling that great. So what he decides to do, instead of going back to the precinct, he gets on an elevator, goes up to one of the upper-level floors of the Bronx courthouse, picks a district attorney's office, and basically passes out in their office. Well, the following morning, the courthouse opens up, and the DAs are starting to pull folders, and they're calling names to write up cases. Well, this cop is nowhere to be found. So they call his precinct. The precinct says he should be at the courthouse. Now you have a manhunt ensuing for this lost cop. First, they check the locker room of the precinct. He's nowhere to be found. Now the duty captain gets involved, and a search ensues at the Bronx courthouse. And they have every unit you can think of going through this large building floor by floor looking for this guy. And now the duty captain brings in emergency service, and they have the bloodhounds going through his clothes at the precinct and now searching for this cop inside the Bronx courthouse. Well, finally, the cop wakes up under a desk, refreshed. He starts stretching out. And he starts walking downstairs, and who does he run into but the Bronx duty captain led by a pack of bloodhounds? Well, the cop was suspended on the spot, but there's a silver lining to the story. The cop went to rehab for alcohol, turned his life around, and then he became a fireman. I want to wish all Sterling on Sunday listeners a happy Hanukkah and a Merry Christmas. And if you get a chance, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Laughing in the Line of Duty. It makes a great $10 stocking stuffer.
If you haven't bought a Vic Ferrari book, you're missing. This is the best airplane book, beach book, pool book, waiting for the kid to get out of school book. Vic Ferrari, F-E-R-R-A-R-I. He's got a store on Amazon. It's a beautifully done store. All of his artwork, books, pictures of him. Vic Ferrari's a cool guy, and I have to tell you, I am so grateful. I had Vic Ferrari on as a guest a couple years ago, and he was just so good as a guest, because, you know, I don't have many guests. He was just so good. I said to him, would you like to tell a story every week? He said, sure. And every week, he tells a story on Sterling on Sunday. We're on from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. It's 22 minutes into Christmas right now. You will love Vic Ferrari's books. Go to Amazon, look in the Vic Ferrari store, buy one of his books. You've enjoyed his stories. Nice way to say thank you to Vic. Buy one of his books. What were we going to talk about on Christmas Day? Now it's Christmas Day on the East Coast. You see the movie A Christmas Story about Ralphie and the Red Ryder gun, and his friends, and the friend getting the tongue stuck on the pole, freezing it. You've seen A Christmas Story probably many times. A Christmas Story, when I first saw it, I said, wow, it's amazing. Well, it's interesting. If you really watch A Christmas Story, it's not a story. It's a series of scenes. It doesn't have an ongoing plot except whether or not Ralphie got the gun. The reason it's a series of scenes, brilliant, interesting scenes, is actually A Christmas Story is a compilation of stories that were told on the radio by Gene Shepherd between 1957 and 1977. Gene Shepherd did something that no other host on the radio has ever done before or since. He performed a miracle every night. for 45 minutes on the number one radio station in America. This wasn't some cute little NPR piece of crap. This was a real radio station in New York City. And he'd get on the radio, and for 45 minutes, five nights a week, he would tell a coherent story. Beginning, middle, and end. No phone calls, no guests, just Gene. 45 minutes, he'd tell a story. It wasn't a monologue, it was a story. And he was a brilliant storyteller in that he would start the show with a story, and then he'd interrupt his own thinking, and he'd say, did I ever tell you about this? When I was a kid, and you thought he forgot the first story. And he'd go for 40 minutes telling this other story, and at the end of the show, he'd weave them together brilliantly into one conclusion. Well, you can hear these stories at a website called Flick, F-L-I-C-K, Flick Lives. If you want to hear radio how it's really supposed to be done, not screaming at the Democrats, you just really want to hear it, you go to Flick Lives and listen to any one of those shows. Virtually every show he ever did is at flicklives.com. But A Christmas Story was a compilation of all of his Christmas stories, because he'd tell a different one every Christmas, plus some other stories thrown in that weren't really Christmas stories, but they became that in the movie. When I was 20, I got my first job in New York City radio, and boy, was I lucky. I was at the FM station where he worked at the AM station. FM was coming into its own, and I worked on the second floor of the building at 1440 Broadway, 40th and Broadway, and Gene was on the big AM station. He was on the 24th floor. The studios were then on the 24th floor. Second floor versus 24th floor. That's what you need to know about the corporate hierarchy. A friend of mine who was also 20, we were both lucky. We both were working at this station. We dared each other one night to go up and watch Gene Shepherd. We dared each other. This was before magnetic passes, security doors. How did we get into his studio? We got on the elevator. We went up to the 24th floor. We walked down the hallway till we found his studio at a radio station that had many, many, many studios for one station. And there was his engineer, his board operator, his girlfriend, who was also his producer, and Gene. And it was 20 minutes before air. And he came out and he talked to us, and he was really nice to us. And a temperamental, quirky talent can go, it can go either way. He could have also been a jerk, but he wasn't. Gene Shepherd was not. He was a wonderful conversationalist, of course. We had this great chat with him. He asked us about radio. We asked him about radio. What do you think about this one? No matter who we asked him about radio, he'd always answer the same way. A flash in the pan. There are flashes in the pan. Because he knew what he was creating was not a flash in the pan. His stories were not date stamped. They were evergreen, and therefore they were art. And what he talked about was American rituals. That's what Christmas, New Year's, the prom, the first date, graduation, being in the army, getting married, falling in love, American rituals. That's what he talked about. They were timeless. You listen to one of his shows today, you'll be enthralled. You can listen your whole car ride when my show's done, and you'll have a great time. FlickLives.com, FlickLives.com. All right. Now, Tony Russomanno and I are in the control room watching Gene Shepherd do his show, his one-hour monologue storytelling, and we realized immediately that this incredibly coherent beginning, middle, and end story, he had no script, he had no notes, he had one-inch-high-by-three-inch-wide piece of paper, and on one side of the paper had one word, and the other side had another word. And when he got off the air, he tossed it in the wastebasket. Those were his only notes. Every night he had a two-word note to pull together this incredible story. And that's where A Christmas Story came from. Just watching Gene, we were sweating. All right, now he's done. Now Gene Shepherd, author, narrator of A Christmas Story. That's his voice on A Christmas Story. Narrator of A Christmas Story. He comes out. He's done with his story. We're mesmerized. And he picked up the conversation with us exactly where he left off, as though the miracle hadn't happened, as though the radio miracle performed before our very eyes hadn't even happened. He just came out and picked up right where we left off. And I listen to Gene Shepherd programs to stay freaking humble, because never will I or anybody on the radio today ever be as good as Gene Shepherd, author, narrator of A Christmas Story. None of us will ever be that good. The man performed a Christmas miracle every single night. It's 30 minutes into Christmas Day on the East Coast. Coming up, Santa's getting to the Midwest and to the West Coast, and we're going to have a spectacular Christmas Day, you and I. I am so blessed to be able to share the beginning of it with you. This is Sterling on Christmas Eve.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by pilot error.
Keep us out over the lake south of the city for now at 3,000 feet, but I'm not sure we're going to maintain 3,000 very easy.
Well, Walt, of all the Christmases I can recall, most of them were spent behind a microphone at a radio station. I didn't have family that required me to be home, so I was happy to volunteer to let the folks with the burden of wives and children have the opportunity to do all that stuff that's appropriate for families. And the most interesting of those Christmases behind a microphone at a radio station was I was wishing people, every time I spoke, happy holiday, Merry Christmas, and I hope the family's having a good time. And, oh, look at that turkey you're serving. Oh, that ham looks beautiful. I would be making comments about the food and the activities people were having, and somebody called me and said, what are you eating for Christmas? And I says, I'm not eating anything. I don't like the taste of records, and the tape cartridges aren't flavorful at all, so I'm just here. And I know where the radio station is. That where you are? Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, thanks. Bye. And of course, some lovely young lady, barely out of her teens, came to the radio station with a plate of food, turkey and mashed potatoes and stuffing and all the good stuff one would expect on Christmas. And at first I'm thinking, should I really be swallowing this? What could possibly be in this food? Is this my last shift? And so we shared a little bit. I watched her eat without it being obvious, of course. But once she put her fork in it and put that fork in her mouth, I figured it was safe. And we spent a little while talking while I was eating, and I offered to share a little more of it. And she, oh, yeah, okay, I'll have a little bit more. And she called the next time I was on the radio and said, hey, I was wonderful meeting you. I said, frankly, it was wonderful meeting you. And the next thing you know, we're in a relationship, and it lasted for several years. And that's my best Christmas gift ever.
Randy West, a regular contributor to Sterling on Sunday, but Randy has the distinction of having been one of maybe five people in history to be an announcer on The Price is Right. Can you imagine that? He was an announcer on The Price is Right. Much respect for Randy West, who always is generous with his time on Sterling on Sunday. It's Christmas Eve, and now if you live in the East Coast, yes, I stopped the piano for a moment. I was playing the piano for you. It's 38 past the hour, 38 minutes into Christmas Day, and you and I are driving on 80, 81, Deluge, I-90, 101, the 101 freeway in California, listening on KFBK in California and up to Bend, Oregon. I love being on the radio, and I love being on Coast to Coast, and I'm grateful for our big affiliates, Steve Moore at KMOX, Greg Stocker, WPHT, Michael Ewing in Sebring, Florida. Now there's the gig. You want to be in Sebring, Florida, and Jay Clark. It's also the time of year when people are really, they do this bizarre thing, big companies especially. They look at their year-end books and they go, oh my gosh, we got to make our budget. And in December, they lay people off. Between Christmas and Thanksgiving and Christmas, people get laid off. Sadistic, unnecessary. whatever that person was getting paid isn't going to save that company if they fire them in December or January. Probably best to wait for January. But I'm not sure what the circumstances were, but I'm sure it was budgetary, as the trades say. There's a brilliant program director named Ann Gress. And Ann Gress programmed WOGL in Philadelphia. It sounded incredible. And she got a job at a station I created called New Jersey 101.5 as the program director. I don't consult it anymore. I did not consult it for the 3 years she was there. But I know Ann Gress. And Ann is one of these people that when you walk in her office and she gives you a big smile and says, "How you doing, buddy?" she means it. Blessed, a blessed person. And I hope Ann gets a great job very soon. And I will do every single thing I can do to help Ann Gress get a great job. But at this time of year, when you know people who are being laid off at your company or other companies or friends and neighbors, sometimes it's easy to think that they have the plague, that you really don't want to be seen with them or seen by them. It's just sort of instinctive. It's not cruel. You don't mean to be a jerk. Let me share with you the fact that if you know somebody who's lost their job, this is when they need you. And you might be afraid that they're going to hit you up for their mortgage or their car payment. They're not. What they're going to say to you is, "Hey, you know, you want to know how you can help me? Would you take care of my kids for an afternoon? We need a break. I got to go to the movies. I've got to go on a date. Let me get out of the house." Or, "Hey, you're going food shopping? Could you pick up milk and eggs for me?" And you'll buy their milk and eggs. And instead of getting a quart, you'll get a gallon. Instead of getting a dozen, you'll get two dozen. That's the help somebody who's just lost their job needs. You can't get them another job, probably. If you can, great, but probably you can't. You're not going to make their mortgage or their rent. It's okay. They don't need that. They just need, ask them. Ask them what they need. Because you might imagine their needs are much bigger than they think. A tank of gas might be more than they could ever imagine and better than a car payment. If you have a friend who lost a job, be their friend and show up. Just show up. Then practically, if you show up for the person who gets a job, who's just lost their job, when they do get a job and you need some help one day, they will help you. That's, if you want to be practical, there's your payoff. But if you want to just be spiritual and do the right thing, I have learned that if I just show up for the person who's just lost their job, I feel great, they feel better, and it's the proper way to take care of the holiday season and the holiday spirit. Coming up in just seconds, what have we got for you? Let's see. I'm going to tell you about this really bizarre, strange Dickens village that I ran into. And you and I will talk some more. Coming up in seconds, this is Sterling on Christmas Eve.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by TikTok.
Boy math is when they need to leave the house by 5 o'clock. So at 4:59, they're literally ready to go. Like, they're literally ready. They just need to hop in the shower super quick. But other than that, they're literally ready to go.
I had it made in high school, but of course, I didn't realize it at the time. I never had to work and go to high school. I could devote all my time to school and continue to leech off of my father's dime. But by the time I graduated in June 1972, I was eager to get a job and earn some real money. I went over to an area mall and put in several applications. I got a call back from a store that sold all kinds of cheese and meat, along with bread, candy, and other such items. Not a grocery store. It's a store that had the word Farms in its name. Those stores were everywhere in the 70s. The brand is still around, but sells mostly gift boxes online. I started work the following week in June, and I was still there in December when I learned a hard lesson about consumer holiday demand. It was truly a Christmas to remember. Our work area was actually downstairs, where we had the cooler and an underground dock for the trucks. There was also a workbench, plastic wrap, bags of nuts, a bag of cherries, and many 40-pound blocks of processed cheese containing cheddar and blue cheese mixed together. I know, because I handled them all, and I did develop some great arm strength in a process that I could perform even today. 50 years later, here is the assembly procedure. Using a wire, slice the 40-pound block into 1-pound squares. Take each block, roll it into a ball. Next, take the ball and roll it into your pile of nuts. Then pop the cherry on top. Turn the ball upside down on the plastic wrap. Pull the wrap together so that all the folds are at the bottom. The product should be clear to view when you open the box. And then place it in that box. Repeat. Repeat again. And continue to repeat until you can take the whole load upstairs. Once upstairs, the balls go into the display cooler where they disappear quickly at Christmas. The boss liked the way I did it, so I had the privilege of staying in the basement and making cheese balls right up to Christmas Eve. At the end, I figured I made over 1,000 cheese balls. It may be a record, but I'm sure my counterparts at the other stores either tied or surpassed me. I sure did earn that $1.75 an hour. It was the only Christmas that I did that. In January, I left to take my first paying radio job, and I saw similarities between the store and the radio station. I know that seems weird, but here's the thing. Whether it's cheese balls or radio programs like Sterling on Sunday, people love them, and you always need to make more. Have a wonderful Christmas and a happy New Year. Sterling on Sunday. Now, 4 good minutes.
Commander Kenneth Hodder is the Grand Poobah, the head of the Salvation Army throughout, is it internationally or in America?
In America.
In America. Now, I saw the best example of the power of the Salvation Army when Hurricane Sandy hit New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And when Hurricane Sandy hit New Orleans, the TV network started to get to New Orleans. They started to put spokespeople on the air. And I expected to see, you know, the head of FEMA, the mayor of New Orleans, who, by the way, we never heard from. It was the head of the Salvation Army was the first one on network television explaining that your 18-wheelers were already there. How is it possible that your organization, which is so large and that you're in charge of, is able to mobilize so quickly?
The reason for that, Walter, is that we're already there. The Salvation Army serves every zip code. We have 7,000 locations. So when a disaster takes place, as it did with Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, we were already there. So it was simply a matter of the people who were there with the Army starting to do the work they're trained to do.
Approximately how much money is donated each holiday season?
During the holiday season and through the Red Kettle campaign, the Salvation Army will receive, and we're hoping again for this year, a little over $100 million. And that represents the hard-earned support of the American public, for which we're deeply grateful. The Salvation Army will use those funds to help about 2.2 million people during the holiday season. And in 2024, it will help us to meet the needs of about 24 million people. And we believe that it's critical that we do so because right now, Walter, there are about 90 million Americans who are having difficulty meeting their regular expenses. About 44 million are suffering food insecurity. And of those, 7 million are children. And it should never be the case that in this country, people are hungry, they're without a place to stay, they're without the things that they need to thrive. And the Salvation Army works very hard to ensure that everyone who comes to us has those things.
I go to the Salvation Army. I go to the local location with the Salvation Army logo. I walk up to the door. I knock on the door and I say, my kids are hungry. What happens next?
They're given food. No questions asked.
Do you have an idea of which group of people, age and sex, tend to give more?
We have learned that it is people who are somewhat older, who have some disposable income, and who have a memory of having either been helped by the Army or knowing someone that's been helped by the Salvation Army. It's an astonishing thing, Walter. When I stand and I ring bells at a kettle every year, within the space of, say, 2 hours, I'll have 7 or 8 people come up to me and tell me their Salvation Army story. For the Army to be so woven into the American psyche as to have that sort of response in that limited period of time, for us, is a tremendous gift. We think of it as a gift from God, but we also think of it as a tremendous responsibility that we must keep doing what we're doing in the name of Jesus Christ to bring his love and his care to every man and woman physically and in the words of support and encouragement that we give.
Commander Kenneth Hodder, once again, a representative of the Salvation Army, has set the bar to where I can go, well, I'll never be that spiritual, but at least I know where to look for guidance. And I thank you so much for being on Sterling on Sunday. Happy holidays. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, sir.
God bless you, Walter, and a Merry Christmas to you.
I know you're going to have a terrific Christmas today, because even if you're all alone today, if you're by yourself, treat yourself. Do all the little things in your apartment or your house that you promised yourself all year. Give yourself the Christmas gift of some of that bucket list. And I want to meet you this year. Let's get together this year. Here's how we do it. If you go to waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com, you will see the very top of the homepage a picture of the Mediterranean off the coast of Nice. And you and I, for 9 days, can go to the French Riviera and cross that off our bucket list. Haven't you always wanted to go to the French Riviera? I went twice, and I've always wanted to go back because it's where I asked my wife to marry me. I knelt in the Mediterranean, the water did not boil, and I asked her to marry me. It is so beautiful there. When you wake up in the morning, the aroma is flowers and champagne and sun. And we're going to stay in the same hotel for 9 days. We're not going to move around hotels. It's not some cheesy touristy thing. It's a premium 9 days put together by Colette Travel. Look them up. Find out about them. They've been in business a long time. They called me up and they said, Walter, you know, you keep talking about the French Riviera. Would you like to have a way to bring your listener to the French Riviera? I'm like, yeah, how do we do that? Well, they put together a beautiful 9-day trip, all-inclusive trip with food and hotel, and you got to see it. Get the information, please. Go to waltersterlingshow.com and look at the picture, click, get the information. It's not going to be till next October, so you have plenty of time to plan, but there aren't plenty of slots. A very few number of midnight Misfits will be joining us. Here we are on Christmas Eve. Doesn't it get cozy? Isn't this nice? Even if in the 18-wheeler, we're driving across the country and we're looking at the Christmas lights that we can see way in the woods over there, way in the trailer parks and the mansions all lit up for this gracious, beautiful holiday. I've had so much fun tonight, and I thank you so much. And I thank you, Sean, for being the best producer, control board operator imaginable. The greatest gift you and I can receive is a request for help.
And my classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Next Sunday. All right. Right. Stay bright.